aga siis väike meelelahutuslik paus ja kultuuriline elamus, 3 minutit. Viiuldaja katusel.
And how do we keep our balance? That I can tell you in one word. Tradition!
Tradition! Tradition!
Because of our traditions, we've kept our balance for many, many years. Here in Anatevka, we have traditions for everything. How to sleep, how to eat, how to work, how to wear clothes. For instance, we always keep our heads covered and always wear a little prayer shawl. This shows our constant devotion to God. You may ask, how did this tradition get started? I'll tell you. I don't know. But it's a tradition. And because of our tradition, every one of us knows who he is and what God expects him to do.
Who day and night must scramble for a living, feed a wife and children, say his daily prayers, and who has the right as master of the house to have the final word at home? The papa!
Village. We've always had our special types. For instance, Yenter the matchmaker.
For your girl.
Reb Nachum the beggar. And most important of all, our beloved rabbi.
Rabbi, may I ask you a question?
Certainly, Leibish.
Is there a proper blessing for the Tsar?
A blessing for the Tsar, of course. May God bless and keep the Tsar far away from us.
Others in our village. They make much bigger circle. We don't bother them, and so far, they don't bother us. And among ourselves, we always get along perfectly well.
Of course, there was the time when he sold him a horse and told him it was only 6 years old, when it was really 12. Now, it's all over, and we all live in simple peace and harmony. It was really 12 years old.
It was 6.
Traditions, traditions. Without our traditions, our lives would be as shaky as a fiddler on the roof.
It is an interesting thing. Väga huvitav on avastada.
So it's good to discover traditions as well. What is said at the church door and what you find inside Narva, in the Pentecostal church in Narva, which is on the eastern border. And I was told, if you would come on Sunday morning, you would have to wear a skirt and a scarf on your head. But you can't go to another Pentecostal church where I came from, and you could go wear trousers and not to cover your head. But what do you do with certain traditions in the changing world? In Iran, women are cutting their head and throwing off their head covers. And it is revolutionary. They want to get rid of that tradition. In Egypt, it was a very difficult environment for one reason. There were no women around. Women were not out on the streets. One day in hotel, we had good food.
Ma rääkisin Iraanist, jah, et
see on asja. So we can have a discussion on Iran. Trying to contact Paul online at the moment. Okay, that's about the Iran, that about how there is a lot of promotion, that it was not that actually that it was not, but it's about a lot of kind of Western influence, that there was that it's a lot of spies, as if it was that what happens in Iran would be like behind that, what there is infiltration, as it was the processes in from Russian people infiltrated Estonia and other who caused trouble. So I don't know how things are happened, but I wanted to use this example to make you think about their situation. That in Estonia we order in women. I'm a female teacher. But in many churches, according to tradition, it would be unheard and impossible. I should behind the scenes, locked in the home, wearing long clothes. How did you women come to seminary? Who encouraged you? Has somebody told you that you shouldn't be in the seminary? Would you like to share? So somebody online? We were converted in a charismatic church that they allow more women to speak and minister, and they allowed women to participate in everything. When I came to church and I looked at the people in the church, and I thought, I can't preach. I cannot teach the others. But I thought that I felt like I'm the stupid one. But later on, the more we learned more about God, we learned about the Bible, and I felt like that I've got something to share. I wanted to share. I wanted to pray for someone, that I wanted to explain something. And we were trained how to lead a cell group, how to lead a Bible study, and women were welcome in every area of church ministry. And I came to the seminary. to learn more and maybe start preaching as well one day. Now the same question, whether the women should be allowed in the seminary, can a woman have a calling to become a shepherd in the church? But actually, we discussed this in the seminary in Asperger. Can we do that? Can it be a real call from God to ministry? So there's nothing new, and a lot depends how you are raised, what is your church background, and depends on your tradition. What is your answer to the question whether can women enter ministry? Do you feel that you have come against your tradition when you... No? My family was... We're not Christian. And so I kind of broke the church tradition, who were traditionally Orthodox, but non-church-going Orthodox. So it was already a break with the tradition there. Mm-hmm. Didn't get the whole story because couldn't hear it very well, but okay, she considered that when my family asked where you go and where you're studying, and then you hear interesting opinions and questions, is it allowed what you are, because they come from Orthodox background. But the fact is, the life changes and cultures change. My parents were the first people who, generation of a family who came to the city. The countryside, you work from morning till evening. What is the in the and in the city, you go to the morning in the for. In the morning, you come home at 5 o'clock, and they watch television. That comes on, and mom comes home from work, cooks the meal, attends the kids. The women's job in the city is much bigger than it used to be in the countryside. The equality in the city is, you know, in the city. So today we have many helpers. We've got washing machines. We've got sort of great things. So the life is easier now for women as well. It doesn't matter whether you are a wife or there's no special skills. The machines do. So what the society requires of us, women have more opportunities to learn for sports, to do that in the church. We do not accept why women should be kept away when they actually, like in Egypt, that why women have to stay at home, and if they go out only with their husband or the male chaperone. Is it that one thing that is right, or is it a tradition? And tradition changes, and our culture changes, and women are freed from several obligations that they used to have earlier. I like your practical examples, because in Estonia, during Soviet time, what did women do? Women had full-time work. And raised kids. What did men do? They go to work and drank vodka. What did women do in the church? Women went to visit the sick. They prayed. They made coffee. They made the sandwiches. And what did the men do in church? Men who? Women. Were the believers in Soviet time. There were virtually no men, only in the leadership there were, basically. So, they prayed for their husbands. Okay, things have changed. In the Pentecostal church, there are various traditions. I remember my pastor saying that, how is it possible, or how is it pleasing to God that we leave half, we do not use half of God's potential, half or even more than half of people in the world are women. Are we so rich that we we can afford not to use half of the resources we would have, half of our missionaries, half of our evangelists? How can it bring glory to God. How we in our context. So be your best for God. And don't be afraid of your calling if it's burning in. So don't be afraid. This is my encouragement to you. The next source of authority is reason. We're talking about the Wesley quadrilateral at the moment. Yeah. The Bible, tradition, and now reason. Today, in the church, we are back in the same place where the early church was. When the church was small, he had to defend and define how we as followers Jesus are different from Jews, how we as followers Jesus are different from Greek or Roman religions, how do we differ from different philosophies in the antique world, Greco-Roman world, and the first theologians and theologians were apologists who could explain faith, explain the differences and similarities, and this skill and expertise is still needed in the church. You had to read Anselm of Canterbury, a text from him, and the quote, big quote from Anselm is, Fides querens intellectum, faith seeking understanding. Do we want to understand what we believe? Can it be grasped and rationally? A reason is one way of we can know truth, feeling it, experiencing the one way. Tradition is one way of understanding truth and the scriptures, of course. But if our reason is totally against what we hear and read, if our reason cannot appreciate it, then we are in conflict with ourselves. But reason always has to be submitted to the scriptures. The revelation is bigger, and God's word is bigger than human reason or understanding. It does not submit itself to human reasoning always. John 1:3. Everything has. Okay. John 1. God creates the world through wisdom and logic and logos. Yeah. We need reason and understanding. But again, there are different traditions, how we understand it. Tertullian was much appreciated church father. Famous Tertullian is, what has Athens to do with Jerusalem? Athens refers to philosophies and Jerusalem refers to faith. Why do we need to bring the human philosophies to Jerusalem? And why, as Christians, should try to understand our faith or explain it or care what the philosophers think or understand it? But again, another church father, St. Augustine of Hippo, says, reason is like the gold of the Egyptians, not an idol. Again, we should take from the world, from philosophy, the gold that we can and make it, put it into good use, make it to serve the church. As Israel built the temple, the tabernacle, they used Egyptian gold and built an altar. The rich is of the literature, best art, best behavior, best materials, best architects, and make them to build the best churches, the best IT specialists to spread the word, to put them into use of the set. Let's rob the Egyptian gold to build the kingdom, to build the temple. There are Christians, of course. There are Christians should be isolated, should be to keep their own thing. But then there are other churches that said the world is good, filled with good things. Let's make a good use of it. What do you think? More like a Tertullian or Augustine? You like Augustine's view? Okay. Could you defend Tertullian's positions? Why Tertullian thought that that philosophy of Athens, it's a bit dangerous to go to these. The biblical, the Russian text says not Athens, but theology, actually, philosophy instead of Athens. That maybe they thought that the Greco-Roman culture was so idolatrous, so sinful, so different from the Judeo-Christian, and to bring it, put these together, it's just not a good thing to do. About the idol worship, we Christians rejected any kind of idol worship. That it's safer not to take anything, just to be on the safe side. I don't know whether Tina thought that maybe they do it all, so things get things wrong, and maybe everything they do is wrong, absolutely everything. Everything is bad in that culture. So Tertullian was very black and white. I like it. It's very actually charismatic church father, very strong, but at the same time he was so the whole world is sinful. Tertullian's favorite was that Christians should not wear colorful clothes, and the reason if God would have wanted us to wear colorful clothes, then he would created pink and red and blue lambs, everything that is human addition. Well, God created actually black, white, and gray sheep. Therefore, we should wear, and we should not wear this kind of beautiful jumper or yellow jumpers, because God has created sheep of that color. That it is sinful. The world is sinful. When I make a very good photo of myself, maybe I send somebody into temptation. So I was very concerned about sin and keeping faith and church pure. So Tertullian had reasons to say so, but this attitude of total separation with the world. What do you experience? Do you experienced more tertullian view that we have to be isolated, we shouldn't be like the world, or you experience that the world is actually, there are many good things in the church, let's use them. What do you experience more when you live, when you hear more about Tertullian, then okay, show. No, what's the last vote? Who is a Tertullian church? Who is has Augustinian church? Mine is Augustinian. Well, I think it's more open. At least in Estonia. But your home church, what do you experience your home church? Augustinian view? Well, actually, there is no right and wrong answer, really. Thomas Aquinas actually says that reason cannot penetrate the mysteries of God, yet reason helps us to understand revelation. I think this is a very good balanced view. But once when I noticed in church that the pastor in his sermon used the word the world, but he used the word world and them, and he talked about them in a negative, everything outside in the world, there are somebody who's them, who are extremely sinful and dangerous. If I had been one of them and I would have come to church this morning, how would I have experienced that? That was the first thought. And the other thought that occurred to me was that, is it true that they there do not care about justice, or do not love people, or do not want to solve issues of addiction, violence, family issues? Are these the people who want to divorce, who want to live in the sin? Are these people in behind these windows like this? And I thought that I like to watch the morning television. I open there is television, which is a morning program, and every day there are certain topics. They discuss what is written in the newspapers. What are the main issues or hot topics, and what are the solutions? Very often, they have guests, morning guests, who are brought out that because this person lets other people know that when you ride the electric scooters and you do not wear a helmet, you get into accident, you will be killed because you are not wearing a helmet. Because somebody speaks about it, we get a safer environment. Then there are guests that who say that we have to keep the environment. We should reuse our resources. Can you take your used clothes and shoes? And then there are guests who talk about sending humanitarian aid to Ukraine. There are people who come, guests who talk about home violence, house, family violence. Where can young people turn to when their parents argue, when there is violence? Where can they go? If you want to donate, how can you do it? There are so many people who actually are them, the sinners, the world, who are doing the same stuff that we in the church, and they do it better than we do it in the church. And therefore, we should be careful. Maybe we should do more collaborate. We can do it. Maybe they can teach us something. And maybe this is the way that they have the opportunity to hear the gospel, and we benefit from their knowledge and expertise. Maybe it's not only them and us, and we can explain why we do it in the name of Christ. Let's be open to the opportunities that the world is also full of opportunities and not only full of dangers. But the trouble with reason started with enlightenment. Enlightenment is something that is actually something brought change. Medieval period was when people, well, everybody believed, and now the philosophical ground changed, big change into philosophy, where reason became the main source of authority. God was reduced to a watchmaker who made the clockwork and set it to motion. It ticks now according to the natural laws, but they still needed God to explain how the world came into existence. And it was the Enlightenment started the age of reason. And it said basically when you cannot touch it, when you can't feel it, sense it, understand it, everything about outside it cannot exist. And God was reduced to the realm of ideas, which is, and it's not a real thing really, because real is only what we can measure and touch and smell and perceive through our senses and our reason. So then first 1700 years, being wise and being Christian go hand in hand. From enlightenment onwards, there was a split. When you are clever and wise, you cannot be a believer in a traditional way, because clever and wise people is not objective reality. You cannot believe in it. So it was a rage of reason, brought a big change. And when people start to think in that way, and theology department is not anymore the most important department in UNC, God is pushed to the peripheries. And there are things, the same people who were clever and wise Christians who actually are clever and believed. John Wesley was one of these. Enlightenment was lived at the time of enlightenment, and it was a time when deism, when God is not actively involved in the world. He didn't go along with deism, with D, but he said that because of our faith, we do visit the poor and the prisoners. Because of our faith, we proclaim the gospel to the workers in the mines. Because of the faith, the slavery was abolished. So enlightenment is not. Didn't have such an effect that it didn't push God totally to the side. So we can learn from the time of enlightenment, and we can learn that the quality of life is important, that a human person is important, and we should support people with education, with healthcare. We should make it possible for children to go up and awareness of a medical vaccination is area. Is it positive or is it negative? And development of science has brought us a lot of good things, and we have benefited greatly from it. And Jesus says, your enlightenment is killing me again. Jesus, during the enlightenment, Jesus became a man dying on a cross, but not the Lord who raised from the dead. Okay, experience is the fourth pillar of faith in the Wesleyan quadrilateral. Experience something without what we cannot exist, but where we make most of our mistakes. What is it about with your generation? How do you believe, or based on what you believe that, or you choose something, or you choose a product, or mostly these are emotional decisions. Advertising, they share their experience. Somebody shares their experience that this is good, I've tried it, that this is a good school, this is a good thing. Many people are here that somebody said good words about this world, or you went to count it, how many points and what are the credentials of these schools, who are the teachers, how many doctors you have among your teachers. How did you choose? First one, somebody advised you to go, somebody experienced. If it said that you first did somebody good experience, was this the reason you came to the seminary? Who is came that because you studied, you looked at the homepage and you decided to compare the schools and decided that this is the best? I looked at the homepage. I looked at the teachers. I looked at the other schools, their homepages. And also, I talked to people who had been it before that me in that school, some friends. Okay, how I chose my school? I'm a former student of this seminary. At that time, there was a university or Tartu when there is a religious studies department. The theology from below is their approach. I went to their open day and heard listened to open lecture. There was an old professor who talked about the Assyrian king Assurbanipal, Assurbanipal of Syria. I had no idea. It's an Old Testament story, but it was so specific. My experience was that, well, how can I go to my church and start to talk about Assurbanipal? Then I looked into the Lutheran Institute, and when I go to the homepage, I see the people in the suits, and they have great titles. They are. And I cannot relate to that. As a young person who is called to God, to something which I don't know, but I know I want to know God. I want to know him more. I want to serve. I don't want to study German. Many books they had to read were still in German language. And then went to the Apteker streets and knocked to the door of the Methodist seminary, which was it's an old town. We had our first house. I knocked at their door and said, and Veronica met me. Veronica smiled and she was friendly. She gave me the application form and called me back. But this school at one point, everything was interesting. There was one problem. That I didn't know what the word Methodist means in the school. What is a Methodist? So who on earth are the Methodists? and I was worried. Then I went to my pastor, who are the brothers? Then my pastor said that don't be worried. They are your grandparents.
Okay.
All right. In church tradition. And that summer, I went to Haapsalu Church. There was a pamphlet, and that pamphlet was about John Wesley and Methodist. Okay. Methodists are who somebody to explain to the Methodist, and I read this little booklet, what John Wesley said, and I believe exactly the same things. Methodist Church. Okay, but not the Lutheran Church. Yeah. But this experience that you understand, you can think, the experience that there are young people and that church is open, that was my experience was important. When I had the interview with the rector, and I wasn't sure of this, about this Methodist, but the interview, the rector, Andrus Norak, tells, welcome to the Methodist Seminary, and may God bless you. Oh, thank you. Okay, they believe in God as well in the Methodist Church, as a young people. And of course, I read the syllabus and everything, the study program as well. But what we want, we experience the community, we believe that you feel safe and you're part of this Christian world. Okay, but experience is important, because for John Wesley, experience of faith, but it had to be lived out in the community of other Christians. So not lonely Christianity, individualism. Me and my God is not the only criterion. We have to hold these things together. Well, of course, Bible comes.